Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge. Get Christmas all wrapped up at Whitewater.
Okay, text your messages, text or WhatsApp them to our Whitewater sponsored text line, and that is 0833 97 97 97. Would you please say a very happy birthday to my good friend Marion Shannon, says Carl Shanahan, says Carol Dunn. Happy to do that. Now, as I said, we'll have the president of the INTO in the second hour of the programme, reflecting on these new measures being introduced in schools today. But the second level sector also has its issues, for example, like emergency measures include an increased involvement of student teachers and retired teachers. And these are emergency measures to tackle teacher shortages. But we have teacher shortages, we have what's called unequal pay, and of course, second level unions are also coping with the COVID measures. Let's hear more, because Eamon Dennehy is president of the Association of Secondary Teachers in Ireland. He's en route to the capital. Eamon, good morning to you. And thank you for joining us this morning. I suppose, anyway, you're well aware of the concerns being expressed by your colleagues in the primary sector this morning. Just let's start with how you and your members have been coping with measures like face coverings, etc., etc., at second level.
Well, look, the first thing I would say about that, about the face coverings, and it struck me from day one, really, and as time wore on, even more so, you know, really the resilience of the second level students. Now, of course, they're a bit older than the national school ones, but I have to salute them on that. Their cooperation with the efforts to try and keep the schools open and stuff has to be acknowledged. It really happening. But of course, the cohort that you're talking about now in national school, of course, they are much, much, much younger, and it is different from that point of view.
Nevertheless, Eamon, young teenagers, and particularly, you know, teenagers at all levels of the second level, but particularly the younger cohort in first year, they're not too long out of primary school, and also they're finding their way in a new system. And when measures come in that, you know, deviate from the norm, it can cause issues for them. How have you and your members, how have your members been dealing with, for example, parents' concerns, pupils' concerns about the wearing of face masks, whether from underlying health conditions or mental health issues?
Well, I think personally, I haven't been involved in those issues at all, but I think basically, I suppose, a very humane approach is taken, and definitely where there are medical advice or medical issues around the issue, that would be taken into consideration, of course. But I have, from where I am, very little about, people not being able to comply with those regulations. And I suppose the other aspect of it, I suppose, in the second level as well, is that practically the entire cohort are vaccinated as well now. So it is a very different situation.
And what about outbreaks of COVID infection at second level?
Well, there's still testing and tracing in the second level as well, but the outbreaks are very common now, from what I can tell, and hence we have this huge need now, you know, for more teachers, all hands on deck now, really, to try, all hands to the pumps, really, to stop the ship going down altogether.
Cue that very point where unions are criticising the department's so-called emergency measures aimed at alleviating the substitute teacher crisis, which will see teachers pay differently hourly rates for the additional work. We'll deal with the 2011 situation in just a couple of minutes' time. But among the suite of measures, second-level teachers already working in schools are being asked to volunteer for overtime to cover shortages. Is that going to put an undue strain on your members? I understand teacher could provide up to a maximum of 35 extra hours between now and the end of February.
Well, the important part there is that it is voluntary, and we welcome that. So, you know, if a teacher has done that 22 hours, there is no compulsion on them to do any more. But I'm sure many of them will be interested in getting involved in it. But it is voluntary, and certainly the STI welcomes that, and it's very important from our point of view as a trade union.
And what about the bringing back of student teachers, maybe in their final year, although I think that's for primary level, but also returning retired teachers to the classrooms?
Well, look, we accept and we acknowledge completely the importance of trying to keep the schools open, and the virus has, it has ripped through society now at this stage, and absenteeism and what have you do to the virus in schools is a serious issue and a very difficult issue. So the supply of teachers is very depleted at this stage. So, you know, we accept that those measures have to be taken. And if student teachers want to get involved, I'm sure they'd be, many of them would be willing to do so. But they are desperate times because there is a shortage of the teacher supply is not what it should be.
And is that preferable? Of course it is, I imagine, to either remote teaching by teachers from their home base or disruption of schools being closed or pupils being sent home.
Yes, and a huge acceptance as well. You know, the schools are a very important part even of society, even outside of their educational role. You know, they're a safe, caring place for young people. So, yeah, we see what that is all about. And indeed, there is no replacement for the actual face-to-face teaching and learning experience in a school.
And we
do want to see that continue.
And your points are echoed by your colleagues in the Teachers Union of Ireland as well, and they share your concerns about pay. Martin Marjoram, who lives in Leixlip, is president of the Teachers Union of Ireland. We'll possibly hear from Martin tomorrow in regards to what's going on around the education sector as well. But both of you have that common concern. Explain that to listeners, why teachers might be paid at different rates, either for their normal work or for working these extra overtime hours?
Well, first of all, there's two parts to that. So we'll do the history of it, first of all. Post-2011 teachers, and sometimes they're called newly qualified or what, they're not really. The term that we use in our union for them now is the lower paid teachers or the lesser paid teachers, who do exactly the same job but on a lesser pay scale than their slightly senior colleagues. And it's unacceptable. It was a measure brought in, in difficult times when, I suppose, money was scarce, etc. But it has persisted now, and they seem to want to perpetuate this situation. And you do have a situation now that somebody in their early 20s or in their early 30s, I should say, or even late 30s, depending on when they join the profession, is now on doing exactly the same job, identical job to a colleague who may be qualified just a few months earlier or a year earlier or whatever, and the only difference between them is maybe that one of them did transition year and the other one didn't, and I'm sure he or she is regretting having done that now because they're on a lesser pay scale. The government decided to cut pay to new entrants in 2011.
All
and
right.
That has persisted.
Now, so,
and what has happened then is that way of thinking applies now as well to these new measures, this overtime, we'll call it, that's being applied in schools.
And
now
it'll be paid at different rates. And finally, Eamon, just to put the point to you, what would you say to people who say, listen, the teachers' unions, the SCI and TUI at the moment should be focusing on safety in schools and continuity of teaching, and that pay claim is for another day, not appropriate to be bringing it up at the moment in the middle of a crisis?
Well, equally, we didn't bring it up. It was the minister brought this up, and the Department of Education decided to apply this to a completely different scheme. Completely, this is an emergency measure. You could argue that it has nothing at all to do with the present situation. That it is an emergency measure, but they didn't take that opportunity to maybe separate. Eliminate this discrimination from this small item, really, because it's just 35 hours work maximum. It will end, we're told, by the end of February. It's a measure to keep the schools open, and yet this what I would call the shameful discrimination against people who are, they're no longer newly qualified or anything like that, who just unfortunate enough to have joined the profession, you know, a few months after somebody else, and find themselves in a completely inferior pay scale.
All right.
And this is being applied to something which is really different.
All right.
It's not really the same thing at all.
All right.
And there was no need for it.
Okay, Eamon, we'll leave it there because I am sure this is going to roll on and on and on. Indeed, another Associated report yesterday, we won't have time to deal with this now, is many graduate recruits are failing to accomplish simple tasks such as writing cogently on a business topic that is free of spelling or grammatical errors, an employers group has warned. I might come back to that later on. But meanwhile, President of the Association of Secondary Teachers in Ireland, Eamon Dennehy, thank you very much, Eamon, taking time out of your morning. I know you've meetings coming up to join us again here on Kildare today.
Thank you. A pleasure. Thank you.
All right, and happy Christmas to you and your members. Up after the break, we're going to be hearing from a listener who is raising road safety concerns in relation to the New Salons bypass. We'll hear from the Food Safety Authority of Ireland about a probe into what's called food fraud, finding unwanted ingredients in herbs and spices. And we'll have an Our Clock listener who is taking an opposing view to the proposed mental health facility development planning application as it stands. All of that to come.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge. Get Christmas all wrapped up at Whitewater.
Okay, keep your messages coming to our Whitewater text, WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97, email studio at kfmradio.com, or you can call us and speak with Kira or Quiva on 0458 98 999. Regarding our listener who got a an antigen test professionally administered, it was done by the pharmacist, and €40, says Willie in Nace, he was charged for that, whereas to buy it is €7. Now, interestingly, that the government proposals to subvent the price of antigen tests or antigen kits, which would reduce it to €3, has now been ditched because Mr. Stephen Donnelly, our Minister for Health, has cited Lidl and other multiple supermarkets asserting the crisis for the government. Like, just because they're charging €3 doesn't mean everybody can get their antigen tests in Lidl or Aldi or whatever else. I mean, the government was initially, it said, we'll have grants in which will reduce the cost for antigen tests no matter where you buy it. Now we have these proposals for professional antigen tests linked to travel and whatever else as well, which can cost 40 to 50 quid a go, not to mention the price for PCR tests as well. I mean, other countries are doing this for free to ensure that the maximum number of people take it up. Where money is involved, if you have to go to your GP, pay 50 quid, your pharmacist pay 40, people just won't do it. A PCR test, as another listener, done in Germany if travelling home would cost €90, and if required over a weekend, you would have to drive to the lab with the test. A professional antigen test can be done in a pharmacy in Germany and you will get a cert as proof. I'm not certain of the cost, but think it could cost around €15 or possibly be free, says a listener. Children in Italy have been wearing masks to primary school for months. It's the norm there. They are better than the adults at wearing masks. It's a view of mine that children will adapt very, very readily, notwithstanding some who have mental health issues or underlying health issues. But the vast majority of children will just understand why and get on with it. You know, adults can sometimes be over anxious when it comes to children. God be with the days when we're all told to go out and play. And don't be under my feet here now. Get out and play, or else you're going to bed. And nowadays, we have got an extremely pampering attitude to children. Everything. You know, we must drive them up into the classroom in our cars. We must worry about this. They can't play with dirt and worms anymore because they might die. We all played with dirt and worms and everything that we came in and horrified our mothers. Look, Mammy, look what I found. Oh, my good God, Jesus, get out. Can I wish my dad, David Begley from Kilcullen, a happy birthday? It comes from Mam, Laura, Alicia, Gina and Katz. Begley, there's a name. I wonder, are you from Kerry or from Clare, David Begley? Because that name is certainly prominent down that part of the country. The price difference in 2 weeks, says Joe Murray in Allenwood, of paying for what looks like an antigen test. In one price, it was €10, and 2 weeks later, it was up to €19. Owen,
Well, we got an email yesterday, Clem, that says, I travel on the New Salins bypass from Junction 9A off the M7 towards Clane on a regular basis. The first section is a dual carriageway until the first roundabout. It then becomes a normal two-way road, but with no warning that the dual carriageway ends, just a two-way arrow sign, practically at ground level at the start of the normal two-way road. I was travelling that road this morning, which was yesterday morning. A car appeared in my rear-view mirror, overtaking a line of cars, and just about to overtake an Arctic when the driver saw a car coming in the opposite direction. I braked and made space for the overtaking car to get in behind the Arctic. I was too close to a catastrophic head-on collision. I'm certain that the driver of the car overtaking the line of traffic thought she was on a dual carriageway because the lack of signage and confusion that causes. This issue needs to be addressed before a serious accident happens, and I will send this email to some of our county councillors. So wrote our next guest, which is Tim Gallagher. He's a listener from Newbridge who travels along the road very regularly. Tim, good morning. Welcome to the programme. Tell us a little bit, Tim, then, about just what happened yesterday. Just remind us what happened.
It was actually on Monday morning on that I was travelling on that road. I was travelling on the dual carriageway section of the Salins bypass. And just as I put in the email there, driving along, I was immediately behind an Arctic. I wouldn't be slow at overtaking myself if the space was there, but I noticed that my rear then that a car was coming along, overtaking the line of traffic that I was in, and was just about to overtake the Arctic. When the driver noticed that there was a car coming in the opposite direction. Now, I've travelled that road, on a fairly regular basis. I have a daughter over in Selbridge, and I go over there probably about once a week. And what I've noticed is that, without the lack of signage to say that you're at the end of a dual carriageway when you come to that first roundabout heading towards the Clane Salins road, that the road itself kind of gives the impression that you're on a dual carriageway, if you know what I mean. The barriers that are there are very similar to what would be on a dual carriageway, and for that reason, I've had the impression myself on a number of occasions, and had to remind myself that I'm not on the dual carriageway here. I'm on a two-way road, and if overtaking, you have to be.
There's a couple of issues here, Tim, and as people know, I'm a resident in Salins, so I know the area quite well, and I've travelled along the road, and we've got contact from listeners as well who would say that it turns into a one-way road very, very quickly. So you're going along in two lanes of traffic, you go around a roundabout, and then it turns into just one lane. That's one of the problems. And then if you go the opposite direction, if you're heading towards the motorway, it's two roads towards the motorway, and then before you know it, it's one road to stay on the road that you're on, or else you end up down on the motorway without any indication that that's where you're going.
Yes, yeah, if you're actually travelling south towards Newbridge from the Clane Salins, and you're on the dual carriageway section of that road, the normal thing would be to stay on the left-hand lane, but if you stay on that, divert it off to the slip road that brings you back to Naas. Again, there's lack of signage there tell us to stay in a particular lane. Left is for Naas only, right is for M7 South or Newbridge or whatever. And again, there's serious lack of signage there on that section.
And ultimately, that's the core issue, Tim, and we'll leave it at this, but you said at the end of your email that you were going to send it off to local councillors as well. Did you get any response from anyone in the area yet?
I got response from two of the three councillors that I sent the email to.
And who were they?
They said Doyle and Peggy O'Dwyer.
Okay.
And said that they would bring it to the attention of the appropriate people in Kildare County Council. I haven't heard any more apart from that. Yeah.
Okay, we'll follow up on it as well on your behalf, Tim, because you're not the first listener who's been in touch with us about it, but we do thank you for sending in that email to us, studio@kfmradio.com. Tim Gallagher, listener from Newbridge, raising those concerns. Good morning, Tim.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks indeed, Tim, and thank you, Owen. And listeners are always welcome on the programme to give their views once, as I say, they give them constructively and with respect all round in terms of the context of what we did yesterday. And we're happy to tell you that we have another listener who's coming on now, because reflecting the other view in regards to the proposed facility at our clock, which we discussed. This is the Kirry Farm mental health facility, where planning permission has gone in for a facility on a farm formerly owned by the Taff family, but sold over a year ago or thereabouts in regards to that. Over the last 2 days, we have heard from Bernard Durkin, who said he was opposed to the facility, describing it as premature from a planning perspective, and from James Lawless, who said he supported the facility. Yesterday, we heard from the CEO of Kirry Farm, John McKeown, wasn't it? And he outlined for us what his family entails. I have to say, overall, the principle of what they're proposing to do, underpinned by qualified medical personnel and then giving people a focus to their and a purpose for their day by working on the farm, all seemed absolutely fine and based on previous practices elsewhere and that. But there are concerns locally. There's considerable opposition within the community, it seems. We played you excerpts from the Art Clock Community Council meeting of a week or two ago, where it has been agreed to hold an EGM on the matter on December 7th. But the meeting culminated following some strident criticism of the chair, journalist Owen Corrie, including the fact that he revealed that he was taking considerable abuse on social media, he and fellow council members, and that his family car had been vandalised. He stepped down immediately at the end of that meeting from the chair. We've been unable to contact Mr. Corrie since, but we want to give all views in relation to this, and some listeners expressed concern yesterday. And I understand, and I'm open to correction on this now, that there's considerable concern around the Boston Road area of Art Clock. And I'm joined now by a listener from that specific area, Roy Butler. Good morning, Roy.
Good morning, Clem. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for joining us this morning. I don't have to state, Roy, that this topic is causing considerable division within a rural community, which would have always been very, very close-knit.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And look, it's not what we want in the area as regards, you know, a division or, you know, any sort of animosity in the area. But I suppose this morning, unfortunately, I was out yesterday. I didn't get to hear the programme yesterday, but obviously I know the ins and outs of it. But I felt compelled to come on this morning to clear up just some of the facts regarding the development. And everybody has had their say on it. And a lot of people who it doesn't directly affect have had their say on it. And, you know, I live on the Boston Road, and I've been living on the Boston Road for over 40 years now, along with a lot of other residents on the Boston Road. And we are the people who are closest and most directly affected by this planned project. You know, people are afraid to come on, some local people. When you go against a mental health facility, you're not popular. So, but it's not about that. It's about just, you know, clearing up some of the facts first up for the people on the Boston Road.
Right, okay, that's well said and well put. And of course there are concerns that people have in any area. And I mean, let's just call it what it is. People can be concerned for a number of reasons. There is the traffic element, there's disruption to the fabric of the local community, and realistically, let's call a spade here. In some areas, when facilities like this are proposed, people have concerns around the people who might be using this facility. Now, let's deal with some of the facts, and I'll give you an absolutely fair hearing on this. The Boston Road, why are you most concerned about it on the Boston Road? Because John McKeown stated yesterday that there will be no traffic to the facility through Art Clock Village, that they will be opening up another access to the facility.
Well, I suppose suppose, Clem, traffic, yes, is an issue for us. And currently, the Boston Road at the moment suffers terribly from what we call the rat run from the Nate Road to Maynooth, Lakeslip and Selbridge. And in the morning, it can be quite dangerous with kids. It's a very narrow road, and it can be quite dangerous even passing another car. And, you know, whether you're going up or down the road, it doesn't really make any odds. You know, it's a tight, little, narrow country road. And you add in deliveries of whether to be concrete blocks or whether to be sliced pans. You know, you're going to meet heavy traffic on that road and actually vehicles that are not suitable for that road. So that is an issue, absolutely. But I suppose the crux of the issue for us on the Boston Road is that in my 40 years living on the Boston Road, I look out my back door and I look across agricultural land. It has been in corn, whether it had wheat, barley, whatever it may be, and it has had grazing animals. And only recently, it has had a stud farm. And in my knowledge, this land has never been zoned for either residential or commercial development. It is a farm, is farmland, agricultural land.
All right, let me take those two points now. So, right, you say it hasn't been zoned for residential development, but there has been a considerable and beautiful household on it, which was originally belonged to the Taff family. That's number one. I understand the planning permission includes provision for obviously a couple of different residences which would be built in the farm to accommodate people who are utilising the centre. But let's take the other top, and you can reply to that point too, and let's take the other side of what you just said there, that what's proposed regarding the use of the farm would not be commercial. It would be about giving people a purpose to their day, just working on horticultural tasks around the farm, and that not necessarily of a commercial nature. I take it you didn't hear yesterday's programme, which is, by the way, up online. You can hear it on our Twitter at KFM Radio, but I'm just putting the points advanced by John McKeown yesterday.
Yeah, well, John puts his point across, and the development is called Cleary Therapeutic Farm. And I'll just give you some very short notes on this, that the proposal is for 40 residents, which is 40 beds. That's 40 heads. 40 staff on a one-to-one care, which brings it up to 80. You will have catering staff, cleaning staff, deliveries. And along with that, the proposal is for a 370 square metre cafe. Now, there will be 61 car parking spaces. That is what is proposed by Cleary on this development. Now, Clem, we can call it what we like, but as far as I am concerned and the residents of the road are concerned, that is not a farm. That is a commercial development in a field. And maybe people don't know that, but this is also open to the public to go to the cafe, and it's also open to visitors who want to visit the people who are going to be residents in that place to visit there. And that is a massive development, in my opinion. Now, I will say that if Cleary Farm wanted to have a farm on that land and bring people on a daily basis to a farm to work in a therapeutic, whatever way, with animals or plants or flowers or whatever, on a daily basis to that farm, I don't think people would have a problem with it. But the issue is that we have a cover-up and a cloaked title on this.
Just hold there, Roy. You're explaining your case absolutely in the most articulate manner. Just let's not use the term cover-up, all right? Just from all sorts of perspectives, because I think, in fairness, the planning application is completely transparent. You might say that from your point of view, that what's proposed is being misrepresented publicly.
Absolutely.
Could I put a view to you that, and I'm not being disrespectful or anything else, is this just about, Roy, that the view out your back window is going to be considerably transformed? And by the way, I could understand that particular if I'm used to looking across green fields and everything else.
I don't particularly, my view won't be madly obstructed. So it's not actually a consideration for me.
Okay.
To be totally honest with you. But there is also walkways proposed within the development that will literally be at my back door.
All right.
If you look at the plans, there are therapeutic walkways proposed to come along the back of the Boston Road cottages. There are 12 cottages. You know, I would also like to bring forward, we have massive issue in the name Ard's Clock. It's high stone, obviously. And in our area, we have a massive issue with rock under the ground. And as Boston